all, I just wanted to hop on really quick before this episode started and give a few trigger warnings. We talk about sexual assault, domestic violence, and violence against pregnant persons. You guys are in for such a treat. We are back for the third time with my two favorite people to talk about all things abortion. Specifically, in this episode, we go over the legislation that's been introduced, the status of the abortion pill access, the violence that's been committed, and the harm that has been done since Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022. If you're seeking a more comprehensive episode on abortion, feel free to check out our episode where we break down all of the abortion access myths in episode 33, or where Moji and I talk about when Roe fell and what happened and all of that. We literally talk about it the day after Roe fell in 2022, and that's in episode 45. But this episode, we're focusing on the anniversary of Roe falling and kind of where we're at now and where do we go from here. I hope you guys enjoy. Hi, all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we have Moji Alawode-El and Marie Kahn back on to talk about abortion and specifically to talk about what happened in the 1 year since Roe was overturned. For those of you who maybe haven't heard our past episodes, those are maybe important for some context. We have episode 33, where we talked about abortion access and myths. And that's kind of just an overall coverage of abortion, what it's like for a lot of folks who grew up in religion and maybe don't know a lot of the facts. That might be a helpful episode. And then we also have episode 45, which was just with Moji. And that was quite literally like the day Roe fell. And it was us processing and talking about what we were expecting for the next like year. And so now we're here 1 year later, and we're going to kind of do a catch up on where we're at. So first off, let's introduce you guys for folks who haven't seen you or heard you yet. Moji, you want to go first?
Sure, why not? Hi. I'm Moji Alawode-El. I am marketing manager at Abortion Access Front and also one of the podcast hosts on the Feminist Buzzkills podcast, where we do a weekly rundown of what's happening week to week. And yeah, I'm excited to be back with you, Fina, for our third time.
You're the only person we've had on three times.
Feels special.
Those robes like SNL gives you.
Yes.
The three times club. It's not three. Maybe it's like
I'll send you a plaque. Okay, Marie, you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Thank you so much. Marie Kahn, she, her pronouns. I am with Midwest Access Coalition, a practical support abortion fund, and I'll explain a little bit what that means. But one of the intersectors here for us is that I worked at Abortion Access Front, where Moji's at as well, and was also an old host on that podcast. Midwest Access Coalition, we are an organization that helps fund costs that people need when they're accessing abortion care. That those costs include transportation, childcare, safe lodging, and food funds. And we also work with abortion seekers to find the funds to fund their procedure costs, which are another big thing. And we work with those folks that are going to be within the Midwest, and then those folks that, and we'll talk about this post-OBS, those folks from the South and from other regions that are traveling to states in the Midwest for abortion care. And I'm the director of programs at MAC.
Awesome. Yay. Also, I was going to tell you, Marie, I thought of you when this happened. I just got a new job at a nonprofit that works on transportation equity and trying to provide transportation for low cost. And yeah. I can't say the name because I don't want people to find me, and the internet is scary.
That's fair.
But I literally, like, you were one of the reasons, and talking with you in that first episode about the barriers to abortion, that like in my interview for that job, I was like, well, yeah, like people need transportation to get to their abortion appointments. Like that's a huge barrier. And they were like, yeah. And it was a total funny like intersection that I thought of you and was like, I wouldn't have even had that on my radar had we not had that conversation, because that was something that I didn't grow up knowing. And so it's cool too to like, now that's actually my job. That's what I do, which is so fun.
When Maria first joined Abortion Access Front, and what she does at MAC now, well, she does much more now, but she was volunteering at MAC, and sometimes we'd be talking and I'd be like, I feel like you're not in this conversation with me. And she'd be like, I'm trying to get a person from like, you know, Missouri to like Illinois, like, and they have a bunch of challenges that like you'd never considered. And I was like, of course, like, you know, I've always lived in relatively privileged East Coast, let's just say New York spaces. And so that barrier had lived objectively in my mind, but I feel like Marie does make that sort of an intimate reality for those of us who don't live with that reality.
Yeah, it's not something, I mean, especially growing up in an environment where abortion was, I mean, I grew up in like a one issue voting family and it was mm-hmm. abortion. And so right. everything that I heard was pro-life, 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 pro-life. I grew up with the narrative that abortions were killing babies. I grew up with the narrative that like you could go to hell for an abortion. I actually was a Senate page in high school. And part of that program was like, you got to practice writing a bill. And the bill that I wrote was like anti-abortion. Because I was like,
those people are now in legislatures.
Because I was such a little parrot. And it's so interesting because that was when I was 15. And then I've talked about this before on the podcast, but like I got raped when I was 15, then again when I was 18. And then my whole perspective shifted where it was like, mm-hmm. like if I got pregnant, I would have aborted this fetus, even if right. I was like totally still thought it was a sin, I would have done it anyways. And so that totally shifted my perspective. And I was like, okay, well now I can't judge people the same way that I had been judging people my whole life. And it really like,
I don't want to overjudge your religious life being a person raised non-religious, but it is wild that like there's a whole religion that's like running this country that doesn't believe in empathy until it happens to them. And we see this yes. a lot with politicians where they're like, yes. gays are bad. Okay, my child is gay. My perspective has changed. And I'm like, it's gotta be a rough road when you need it to happen to you. Like, I don't yeah. need to be gay to know that gay rights are like an important part of just the human condition.
And that's been a learning curve for me. No, it's such a fair judgment. And I think that a huge part of that is the way that fundamentalist Christians are raised is there is a lot of othering constantly. That is everything is othering. It's, and you don't have any connection to those people because of the othering and that they're sinners, and you build up these walls yeah. to prevent yourselves from interacting from people of the world, quote unquote. And so it kind of limits folks. Like for one, there's no self-reflection. And I think mm-hmm. a huge part of building empathy is self-reflecting and just like reflecting on who you are as a person and how you can grow. And that doesn't really exist in religion. And it's built on the backs of narcissistic men, and narcissistic men don't just integrate with empathy. And so then it doesn't really trickle down. And I've had so many conversations about like religion in the last few months with folks. And we talked about just like, it's a safe haven for narcissistic men who don't have to have empathy for anyone other than them, like any care for anyone other than themselves. They don't have to self-reflect. They're handed authority. They're handed leadership. They're told their leadership is God-given. Their authority is God-given. They can't do anything to lose it because it's intrinsic. They don't have to prove that they're good leaders. They don't have to prove that they can handle authority in an ethical way. They just get it, get to run with it, have no accountability, never have to take a look at themselves, never have to do trauma work. And it also is often men that come from traumatic childhoods and chaotic childhoods that enter Christianity as adults. And they're seeking control of chaotic feelings and environments. And so then they just control everybody else. And there's no empathy. There's no self-reflection. And I think a lot of folks, like I am I've always naturally been a very, not naturally an empathetic person as a child, because I don't think I knew what empathy really was. But I naturally would feel things that other people would feel. And it would like really, I was like highly sensitive to emotions and it would hit me really hard. I'd see a movie of someone in pain and I'd feel pain in my body. But because I wasn't allowed to have empathy for anybody because they were all bad and they were sinners, there was mm-hmm. a very consistent like friction throughout my life of just like, okay, like, but I think I'm supposed to like care for these people, but I'm not allowed to. And it wasn't until the personal experiences happened, which if you listen to like any, specifically a lot of people who are raised as women that deconstruct, it's a very common narrative of like, I didn't know. And it is like a gross thing to admit too, of like, yeah, I did not have any care or empathy for any queer people until I met queer people and then was like, oh, what the fuck? I didn't have any care for abortion care. Like nothing. It was just
until I needed an abortion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's also a lot of like, you know, why representation matters, right? Like, even if you don't have the opportunity to meet people, when you have the opportunity to observe people in humanizing situations, even if they're fictional, it sort of gives you an endpoint to like saying like, oh, that is a human experience. And as a human being, I can relate to that. And if that human is feeling that, then we are maybe all human and maybe we all deserve to be treated like humans.
Right. Just anyway, I feel like, where they recognize that. Like, how many media accounts do we need of literal humans experiencing gender-based violence, violence tied to their pregnancy, harm occurring during their pregnancy because of lack of medical care? Like, how many examples do they need?
Emoji. It's so funny because we see these, you know, to bring it, I'm so glad you brought it back to abortion, because to see the state of abortion right now in this country, and we see the harm, right? Like, in these states with these bans, we see the harm, and legislatures are still like, what we need is more harm. I was reading something and a legislator was like, well, we need to have abortion bans with no exceptions for life of the mother. And I was like, oh, you just want to legislate death? Like, so overtly, like, you already are, but you just want to go full in and be like, it's not worth it to save someone's life.
If like, will you harm stop in with your pregnancy of prenatal care? Like, what does that even look like? You don't get care until that baby is here, but it better be here, because if it doesn't appear, we're gonna go after you.
But we know, and of course we haven't gotten into like all of the harm in the last year, but we know in some states, specifically in Louisiana, a lot of places won't give prenatal care before 3 months, because they're like, we don't want to have to even deal with like what might happen if you are experiencing miscarriage and whatever. So we know that that is actually happening in some spaces with abortion bans, that you're not getting early prenatal care. That's just not happening, because that's a way that doctors and hospitals can insulate themselves from the potential things that they would have to deal with, right? Jail time, like losing their license, like real harms for them, but it also translates to real harms for patients.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into that. Let's dive into what's happened, because I know that for some folks that grew up with the pro-life narrative or are people who have uteruses and are kind of just panicked. I know that like whenever there's a lot of horrible, awful things going on in the world, it's common to tune out and to kind of, for your mental health, to just tune out and check out for a little bit because it's too much. But I also think it's really important that people know and are aware of like the urgency here and the state of emergency that we are in. And it doesn't turn into something where there's that dissociation between the real harm that's occurring and kind of just like, oh yeah, like bad things are happening. And it's like, oh no, like we really gotta be aware here. So do we want to talk about like some of the anti-abortion legislation that has been introduced since last June?
So much. Well, first there was not legislation, right? There were all these zombie anti-abortion laws that existed, these trigger bans that existed in places. And when the Dobbs decision went into effect, some went into effect immediately. Some went into effect a month or a few weeks later. And some went into litigation. and so just to sort of as a baseline, and I think we discussed some of them when we spoke last year, just happened immediately, and the harm was immediate. And some patients were outside of clinics or on their way to clinics and got calls saying, don't even come. We're not going to be able to do your procedure. But then a lot of places, laws that had been on books from, you know, decades, centuries ago, right? Pre-Civil War bans, pre-right to vote for Black people and women bans just all of a sudden went into effect places or were going to go into effect in a couple of months. And in some places, fortunately, there's been some litigation or there's been having them in injunctions while they wait to be passed or not. But the idea that we're considering a ban from the 1800s is just fuckery.
Yeah. Wisconsin's a state that the minute Roe fell on June 24th of 2022, Roe ended, like that became the rule in Wisconsin. So that state, folks have had to leave their state for legal abortion. There's plenty of self-managed supported abortion in the state. People have wonderful friends. People have safe colleagues and networks that they can get medication through or other types of pregnancy termination options using herbs and other types of trusted safe options. But to legally do it, you have to leave the state of Wisconsin. It's because of one of those zombie laws, like Moji mentioned. That's a state that that officials are trying to get rid of that still hasn't occurred yet.
And again, like, self-managed abortion is incredible. And I think it is one of our best weapons in places. And I think people, you know, are discovering more about it out of necessity. And that's beautiful. But just this week on our pod, we talked about actually a friend of the pod who had an early pregnancy or assumed pregnancy that went terribly wrong. And medication abortion mm-hmm. would have been a terrible option for them. Unfortunately, right, they weren't in a state that restricted abortion care. But the idea that that other people could have similar situations and just that not be an option for them. And that's when, even if you have, you know, if you feel called to self-manage abortion, it's not always the best case for everyone. We all need all options.
Right, right. Yeah, that's something that I, since like what, I think like 2 years ago was probably the first time I recorded with you guys, maybe a little less than that. But I, like, since then, I did not know anything about medication abortion. And I'm so glad that there's so many, I'm glad for social media, first of all, because even like following Hey Jane, I get so much mm-hmm. information about medication abortion that I like had no idea about. But it is something that there are so many like negative myths about it as well. And there are so many myths about abortion in general, but like, I know growing up, I like, even after 2 years of doing like a lot of learning and self-work and unpacking a lot of things that I had learned that were false about abortion, I still have this like inkling of anxiety about like the idea of ever getting an abortion because it was so drilled into me. Yeah. And there is something about like, there's so many myths, especially in Christian communities. It's a very weird thing with the medication and science and Christianity. There were myths going around for years about, and still are, about the HPV vaccines. Like, I wasn't allowed to get an HPV vaccine until I was an adult because my parents would not let me. And then that also like increases my risk for HPV because I got right. it so late in life.
Which can increase your risk for ovarian cancer, which can yeah. impact fertility yeah. and lifespan. Like,
yep. Not to mention, I was not sexually active as a minor. I did not have sex before 18. I didn't have sex till I was 21. However, I did get raped. Right. So whoopsies, like there's a little problem with that rule. Yep. And so there's things like that where there is a constant like head-to-head combat within Christianity and the idea of, honestly, just like there's a lot of science and medication things that they have a lot of incorrect ideas and a lot of misinformation. And so I think even just like, I don't know, for me, I had less anxiety, and this is kind of crazy, but I have less anxiety about the idea of going in for a performed abortion than the idea of taking abortion medication because of so many myths that have been pumped into my head. And that's a whole other thing that like, that doesn't mean that I wouldn't take it if I needed it, but it does mean that there are so many myths and misinformation that having all options where someone might be more comfortable going in and getting an abortion compared to taking medication is really important too.
It is. I feel like, you know, there's no wrong way, right? That's why we should have all options, because for whatever reasons, even if you were like, I have done the research, which I don't know what that means, two Googles in this country, but like, even if you're like, I've done the research and you're like, oh, it turns out medication abortion for me is like so safe and like probably the safest way. If you don't feel comfortable, it's not the right option for you, right?
Right.
It's
right.
not. And that's why we should have all options for whatever we need. Also, like, you're not a doctor. Like, I feel like even without like Christian misinformation, we all have misinformation that we know, that we've like heard from a friend of a friend, that like a fellow peer said, this is a fact, and you never interrogated it. I realized I'd worked in abortion access for a couple years. And for some reason, because a friend had told me once, I thought that the morning after pill could sometimes cause an ectopic pregnancy. And I remember saying it and someone being like, that's not true. And I like, that doesn't even work logically. And I just had heard that, not interrogated, not done a single Google, and was just walking through life like, oh, if you take it too late, it can cause an ectopic pregnancy. That's not true. That is fully unfactual. And it was just something a peer told me and I took it face value. So I think, you know, it's the like, we should be able to talk to professionals. And one of the harms that these abortion bans are doing is making it in places with these bans, doctors can't talk candidly with their patients. So even if you need an abortion and you're in Texas to save your life, doctors feel constrained to even have that conversation with you about what your options should be, about whether or not you should leave the state to get the care you can't get in the state. Like, this all leads to perpetuating misinformation and you having to kind of lean on trusted friends. And I think that that's good. We should lean on our trusted friends. We should have friends we can trust, but also like our friends aren't doctors.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a last resort. And I think the thing that's interesting too, is like the government and states and politicians are not just barking with these threats. Like they're biting.
Oh, absolutely.
We've already seen them gone after doctors. We've already seen them go after, like, even outside of abortion, even like the don't say gay bill. And then immediately, like, there was a teacher in Florida who showed a Disney film that had a queer character that I don't even know if she knew was in the movie. And all of a sudden she's like losing her license to teach.
Yep.
Like it's not just like there's not just a bark, like they're biting. And so I think that that's something that was also, I mean, there were obviously, like, if you were informed about abortion last year in June and you knew it was coming, I still had this kind of inkling, and this is probably me just being naive and new to this, but I had this inkling of like, well, what if this is just a threat? Like, how are they actually going to enforce this? Is this legit? Is this just, are they just threatening? Is it going to be that bad? And then within like 2 weeks, I was like, oh fuck, like it's really bad. This wasn't a threat. Like, it's funny, oh no.
I think most of us who saw it coming down the pike, we're still hoping, you know, hoping that maybe, I think when it happened, it was still really stunning and heartbreaking and breathtaking. I'm sorry, Maria, I feel like I'm just yammering. Feel free to.
Oh, no, this is great. I love it. It's a Saturday, and I appreciate where we all get to chill and talk on a Saturday. It's so much more relaxed. I was literally hoping that certain Supreme Court justices were going to drop dead. I was like, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to vote for a literal act of nature right now. Because it, and it seems like other than leaving ICWA intact, which I am so incredibly grateful for, that the Indigenous Child Welfare Act, that SCOTUS left that together a couple weeks ago. But everything they have done is terrifying.
And yeah, I mean, yesterday, there was like multiple things that passed yesterday that are horrific and awful.
I believe they took the ICWA case and one of the other, the state's doctrine, the like weird, like independent states doctrine thing. They took these cases specifically so that they could have cover for eliminating rights for abortion, affirmative action, and for queer people. I think that they just were like, these stupid cases we took so we can like have some cover and be like, we don't just do crappy things, we'll just do the big crappy things. No, I mean, Indian Child Welfare would have been actually a really big crappy thing also. Yeah. Anyway, that's my galaxy brain.
back to abortion. I wanted to circle back to one of the things Moji had talked about you not able to get care in Louisiana, for example. And I wanted to highlight too that in states where the place people could get sonograms, the place people can get STI treatments, were those abortion clinics, those Title X clinics that were providing information that weren't even providing abortion care. A lot of those places have also been evaporated because of funds being pulled because of dogs. Okay. So that is something else where, as someone who works in abortion access and is messaging and talking with abortion seekers, we will have folks sometimes who are like, yes, I know I'm pregnant. I know I need an abortion. I can't go get an ultrasound though. And then folks, they return back after getting medical care, they need follow-up care. So if you are someone, for example, I've worked with multiple folks from Wisconsin. If you're someone, for example, who's like, oh, I have bleeding and I know I'm anemic and I need to get support for that. Your ability to get that type of aftercare in your state is limited even more than it already was in Wisconsin when Roe was still an option, because Wisconsin is chronically a conservative state. So using Wisconsin as an example, but like folks in Missouri haven't had actual surgical abortion available to them in over a decade. So folks in Missouri have always had to leave or have had to try to find those doctors.
Because the legislator was virulently anti-abortion and basically created all these trap laws that would make it so that abortion clinics could not operate in the state.
Like ambulatory reporting requirements, insane, like you have to be an OBGYN to provide abortion, to provide medication, pill abortion, like these ridiculous laws. They're one of the toughest states on young people. They have a civil kidnapping statute to make it civilly make me as a person, for example, civilly pursuable if I assist a young person in getting an abortion and their parent or guardian finds out about it.
I thought that was Iowa. Criminal. Is that Missouri?
That's Missouri.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And they have it framed like, oh, because you could traffic someone from outside of the state. No, these are young people who are pregnant and don't want to be. And if you actually bothered to talk to them, you would may learn that it also wasn't at all planned or consented to. And they're trying to get medical care. But they're in these states that from the get-go trap you, that say you can't get neonatal care until 3 months. You can't ask any sort of questions. You can't talk about your period if you're younger than eighth grade. You know, all these things that we're putting on young people, young bodies, or we're putting on bodies of any age that aren't allowed to get equipped with the information. It has gotten worse since Dobbs occurred. We're also seeing the state clinics, those CPCs.
That's
a different topic, and I don't want to go there yet.
I think it's great because that's actually where I wanted to go too. I was literally about to jump in with that we're seeing that fake clinics, what is happening in these states also, as the care that Maria is talking about has been decimated. A lot of legislatures are like, well, we're going to put aside millions of dollars to these fake clinics that don't really give any care. They give ultrasounds sometimes that they can't read. And they basically, their whole reason is to talk people out of abortion. But legislatures are like, we can throw money at them and that'll fill in the care. But the caveats are like, you can't refer a neonatal abortion. You can't like actually give out birth control. And so the real clinics that would give the care that's missing are fully left out of this money that is essentially not Title X money. It's other money because these states are now not eligible for Title X money.
Right.
Because the clinics that they have don't give the kind of Title X care that it requires.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, can the fake clinics also, like, isn't it common that they give a lot of religiously coded information where there's a lot of, like,
absolutely
Bible verses and, like, kind of things like that in the, in the quote-unquote medical sphere when it's not actually a medical sphere?
And in misinformation like abortion reversal, like things that are actually dangerous for people.
Abortion reversal?
Abortion reversal. Yeah, it's not a thing. So it's a thing. It's a made up thing that some anti-abortion doctor made up several years ago. And it basically is the idea that if you are taking the medication abortion regimen, after you've taken the first pill, you can take a lot of progesterone and that will reverse the abortion if you haven't taken the mifepristone. If you haven't taken the misoprostol. It turns out, when actual medical professionals tried to do a study on this, they had to stop the study because of the level of hemorrhaging that the subjects were experiencing. But this has not stopped some anti-abortion states from mandating that people tell abortion seekers that this is a thing and a protocol that they should consider. I want to point out that when real medical professionals tried this, so it's not just like a benign stupidity, right? It's like actually something that can lead someone to the hospital with hemorrhaging.
For no reason, too, because if it obviously doesn't work, what the fuck is the point of telling folks that?
Right.
And acting like you have an option. And I'm not even saying from a perspective of, let's say that someone is unsure if they want an abortion and thinks, okay, well, I could try it out. And then backpedal if I need to. That's even dangerous. And that's not helping either. That's not helping anybody. It's not like it's helping the religious cause either, because either way, the abortion has still happened.
Yeah.
And you're not helping the person. It's not helping also, any cause.
But I think one of the things that it does push is this idea that people regret their abortions. And I'm not saying no people regret their abortions, but I'm saying that generally that is not the most commonly held sentiment about abortions. And it sort of mandates like women are making decisions that they are unclear of and their decision making can't be trusted. So we have this safety and we want to make sure they know about it.
Which also, I know a lot of that regret narrative, and I'm sorry to keep pushing things back to religion, but the way that I view and have been taught abortion is all through a religious lens. So I know that in fundamentalist Christianity, there's also a very common narrative of in general and in the world, but there is this narrative of the patriarchal leadership model in fundamental Christianity that women are not calm enough or competent enough, or they're too emotional to make rational decisions. They can't deal with big decisions. They can't deal with the finances of the household. They can't deal with helping make these big decisions. And so I think that also, it makes sense that that's all in line with that narrative of like, well, we can't trust. And it's the same thing with like the bullshit narrative of if you go to the doctor and say, hey, I don't want children ever, can I move forward with a procedure to prevent me from having children? Can I get my tubes tied? Whatever. That the 9 times out of 10, a doctor is going to say, do you have a husband? Can I talk to your husband? Can anybody, yeah. can I get verification that you are like sane enough to make this decision? Which is, it's just that whole, it's so embedded into like.
And that's what abortion waiting laws are for too, right? These 48 hour, 72 hour waiting. It's essentially saying, people are going to go and say they want abortions, but they need some time to think about it.
Which that was one of my questions. Have we seen any of those waiting periods? Either have we seen any states that have introduced new waiting periods post-Roe, or have we seen any states that have increased their waiting period?
The Carolinas have, as they decreased their length of access, I believe they increased a waiting period in North Carolina. I know this, but I don't have it written in front of me. But I believe North Carolina, in their huge bill, they decreased the amount of time you can have an abortion in North Carolina till 12 weeks.
Which a lot of states have done that, correct?
12 weeks is considered the new compromise, which is not a compromise.
And what was it before?
Like 20.
Oh my God.
Or 24.
God. I didn't know it was that
individual
big of a gap.
States more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's 12.
Holy shit.
Some states have gone down to 15. Florida is trying to go down to 6, but it's gone down to 15.
What's the average? How long does it take for most people with uteruses who are pregnant to know they are pregnant? Like, what is the average time that you know you're pregnant?
Pregnancy is so individual. There is no average. But people don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks because that's 2 weeks after your missed period.
Yeah, that's speedy. That's if you are on it.
That's 6 weeks. And that's assuming you are tracking and you are like, I'm a day late for 14 days. And then you're like, oh shit, there might be something. So like most people, unless they're literally trying to get pregnant and doing extreme tracking, are usually not aware they're pregnant.
Well, to mention, even at 6 weeks, like I am anal as fuck about my period just because I have the biggest fear of getting pregnant ever. And so I'm always checking it so aggressively and like checking my tracker and making sure that I'm like, oh my God. But even let's say that like a week after my missed period, I'm like, oh no, even getting my ducks in a row to get an abortion and to fund an abortion and to talk to my partner and to come up with a game plan, even that that's crazy to try to get that all done before a 6 week timeline. That doesn't make any sense.
Even finding a provider, because most of the Google searches will lead you to not a provider. And a lot of the things that these fake clinics do is tell you that you are less far along than you are, so that you have a sense of ease about it, which could lead you headlong into an abortion ban. So if you go to a fake clinic, you don't realize it's a fake clinic. And then you like wait another week because they tell you to wait another week. Well, there you go. You've blown your 6 weeks already.
Right. Right. And even I know that a huge part of
person who moves really quickly.
Right. And I know a huge part of fake clinics, that is a huge goal, right? To try to just delay as much as possible. Delay, 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 delay. And then you time out.
I went to a fake clinic when I had an abortion in my 20s, and I went to a fake clinic in New York City in Midtown New York City that I did not know was a fake clinic. And I'd never been pregnant before. And I was like, immediately went in and I was like, well, I don't want to be pregnant. And they were like, call us back in a week. And I was like, okay. I called them back in a week. And this is me like being on it, being clear from the beginning what I wanted. And more than that, being in a blue state. You know, when I called back and they were like, wait another week, I was like, something's fishy. I'm going to just find a hospital. And that's basically what I did. I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what's happening with these people. I'm just going to go to a hospital. But that's a luxury that I had as a New Yorker.
Even just being able to have the instinct to think it's fishy, because some people might not even catch on to that. And then they're pushed out 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. And then next thing you know, they're time out. Like they've lost their time
window.
That's
just my bougie. It's poor customer service. It's like poor customer service. They keep telling me to wait. Like
more annoyance than instinct. Just like, this is annoying. I'm out.
I feel like this has to happen faster than this.
God. Okay. I also wanted to talk, and Moji or Marie, if you want to speak on this, we talked about the potential for the abortion pill to maybe get impacted. And then in the last year, we have obviously seen a huge push for legislation against the abortion pill, and specifically mifepristone. Did I say that right? Mifepristone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Is it at risk currently? And do you want to talk a little bit about the ADF lawsuit and where we're at?
Oh, this is an area too that Moji knows greater particulars on, actually, in all honesty. And like the lawsuit and the legal side. In terms of is it at risk, it's always at risk.
Okay.
And I think people can't, it's always at risk. And I want to tie this back into how you mentioned, especially funding Christianity, but like in general, Christianity's distrust of medicine and science. Like these are medications that exist in the entirety of the world, and also medications whose earlier versions people have used safely as well. So right. One of the things that I get worried about here in the US, we are a big fucking country. People from other countries rely on us for their healthcare. And that is due to a number of things, not chiefly being colonization, white supremacy, all like there's many reasons why someone needs to come to the US for healthcare. So we also have an impact when we say, oh, hey, this medication isn't allowed here. This medication is problematic, all of these things. So I worry about that, how us trying to certain communities in different states trying to pull this from the public access for folks. How that's going to treat general access to the medication always. From what I've seen working with abortion seekers in different states, so far, folks, whether they've been going to brick and mortar clinics, they've been able to get the combination in the US of MIFI and MISO, or using telemedication options, SMA right. options, Plan C pills. Folks have been able, and in those situations, when you're getting the pills, you'll see if it's both medications or just misoprostol. But folks have still been able to access that so far. So I haven't seen the supply dried up, but there's been a lot of worry and concern about it. And it creates also like, you have doctor's offices, you have abortion clinics, you have hospitals that have purchased this medication. And you're literally at the tip of a hat being like, nope, no good anymore. Like just the sheer like supply chain sustainability of it also enrages me, because we know how many people in the US need all types of medication and, and over-the-counter options. And it's like, okay, you're literally forcing people to do this under the counter. There is no other fucking way you're going to let people do this. So Moji, now you know other things.
I mean, you know, I do love a litigation. I mean, I hate a litigation actually, but like, yeah, this is, you know, right now a judge in Texas has already essentially said that it isn't, that the approval was misdone. There is the Third Circuit in Texas, fifth or third, that is just recently had arguments about a month or two ago about whether or not that was wrongly decided. And if you listen to the arguments, which I did, they sound really ready to uphold that judgment that it isn't legal. And it's at the Supreme Court also, right? So there's a lot of really conservative, really right-wing judges who are looking at it, who I think would be really comfortable taking a drug that has been on the market for 20 years off the market. And this is wild, because I'm annoyed that ADF has me signing with pharmaceutical companies. Like, why am I fighting for pharmaceutical companies for a drug that is essential? Also, I want to point out that obviously one of the primary uses we hear about this drug is for abortion, but there's a lot of other reproductive health potential for this drug. And because of how tightly it's been regulated is, you know, we know of off-label use of all kinds of things, right? Botox, we know of it now as a facial wrinkle reducer, but it came as a migraine drug. And it's known as a face because that was just a side effect. And so when we have free use of drugs that we know are safe, we can find lots of other uses for it. I remember reading one article and it was like, well, it could be helpful for kind of fibroids, right? It could be helpful for maybe some sorts of cancers of the reproductive system. But we can't explore that because case, the rein on it was so tight, right?
And And can we clarify for folks who don't know what the case is, like what we're talking about for people who aren't in the know?
Absolutely. So a group of anti-abortion doctors and doctor adjacent people essentially came together. And these are people who don't provide abortions. These are, I think one of them is even a dentist, right? But there were a bunch of people who came together and they went and they created a group called the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. And then they petitioned, they incorporated in one district in Texas, and they incorporated in the district in Texas because they knew they would get one judge. There's one judge who sees all or most of the cases there. And this one judge is virulently anti-abortion, virulently right-wing. Okay. And they went to him. They essentially judge shopped to him, and they were like, we have been and will continue to be harmed if this medication is on the market the way it is. And one could argue you don't do abortions harmed in what way, right? They're like helping people who have had, you know, harm because of the abortion pill will get in the way of us helping our existing patients. A, the abortion pill is really, really safe. The complications related to the abortion pill are like infinitesimal. They're almost like not worth talking about. I'm not saying that they're comfortable. It's expelling a pregnancy, but in terms of harm or like reactions or bad outcomes, it's not a thing. What happens right. is you finish the pregnancy and in that, you know, you have some cramping and some other things. So the judge was like, yep, this sounds right. I agree. We need to look at this again. And so it was wrong. Like, I would argue those people don't have standing. Why they don't even use the abortion pill? How can they say that they will be harmed by a medication that they don't even use?
Right.
In a state that doesn't even have abortion, right?
Like,
as private doctors, if people do have whatever complications they have or whatever aftercare they might need from using the abortion pill, they're going to end up in an ER. They're not going to end up at a private anti-abortion doctor or a dentist office. Not once. So it's moving through the judicial system. It could really go a bunch of different ways, but it's almost like it similar to the Dobbs case. We shouldn't even be looking at it.
Right.
This medication's been on the market for 20 years. It's been in the American market for over 20 years. It was in France like a decade more than that. Like, it's proven in safety and efficacy. It's not a newfangled drug. When you look at rates of complications, the rates of complications for Viagra are ridiculously more, like by a magnitude that I've had the stats for, but they're not in front of me right now. But it's huge.
Right.
It's really, really huge. And no one's saying, like, let's stop Viagra.
All right. For those of you who've been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scouts Honor. Scouts Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scouts Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scouts Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple, Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting!
Right. And can I ask a few myths, I guess, because I've heard a few myths about this lawsuit. One of which, and there might be myths, they might be true, I don't know, but let's clarify. So some of the things I've heard is that this lawsuit was based in the idea that this drug was never FDA approved.
That's what the people are claiming. The drug was FDA approved. We don't have drugs on our markets that are not FDA approved. They're talking about supplements, and you can talk to Alec Jones about that.
Okay. And the other thing that I've heard, and I've done a little bit of my own research on it, but the other thing that I've heard is that part of the reason why people are coming after this drug is because they're arguing that the FDA approval process was rushed or not like thorough enough.
So that is what the people bringing the lawsuit are saying. in fact,
that's what they're arguing.
Of it. That's what their argument is. In fact, the approval for this drug, because it was so controversial, was wild, right? It actually was very thoroughly researched. And even, let's say, devil's advocate, it wasn't. 20 years of efficacy and not harm will say, like, okay, you thought that. And also, there's a statute of limitations, I think, for 7 years to bring a suit like this to a drug. And so we're also well outside of that statute of limitations.
Why has that not stopped it?
Because we have a judiciary that is very comfortable with ending abortion. Because, I mean,
that's fucking annoying.
It is very annoying. This is not a C3, so I can say, because Trump elected a bunch of judges on every level, a ridiculous number of judges. And so therefore the federal judiciary has tilted hard right. And so people, Christian extremists, are using this as an opportunity to throw whatever they have at the judiciary and seeing what sticks.
Right.
And also,
and correct me if I'm wrong.
Go ahead. No, you have. Yes.
Oh, I was just going to ask, this is also the FDA board that approved this medication has also backed the fact that the approval was thorough, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, it's just these doctors, again, who don't routinely treat people who seek abortions that are like, we can try. Let's see what happens.
This is just an ethical lawsuit. It has nothing to do with actual medical knowledge or information or facts.
The medical knowledge or information or facts that they put in are all easily refutable, but the circuit that is looking at them still let those non-facts be included when they when the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine fought for this. So it's bullshit, but it's basically it's also a brilliant strategy. It's being attacked because abortion pills are an easy way to circumvent abortion bans.
Right.
Our government has said that you can mail them. And it's illegal to like over police someone's mail. Right. So unless they literally wanted to like put police in front of every mailbox they potentially thought was mailing abortion pills, one can get them wherever they need to go. If someone just knows where to ask for them and then knows to throw away the wrappers after they're done with them. So like it is the next big target for people who want to ban abortion for anyone at any time.
And what happens if we lose access?
I think Marie's bit about sort of wondering about the global supply is a real demand. We are not the only people who produce the drug, and globally it is still used everywhere and no other country is doing bullshit like this. So probably what would happen
we're finding out, as Americans, we're finding out more and more about like, oh yeah, these supply chains existing because other countries are coming to support of us. We know like other countries, other communities, Los Libres within Mexico and at the border, that organization and those women, those folks have done so much to support self-managing through abortion medication in the U.S. and their own communities that, again, the U.S.'s racism and violence has targeted pre-Trump. So if Miffy would go away, we would still be able to have miso abortions in the U.S. Those types of abortions were done pre-Miffy being discovered and utilized in the way it is. Those are abortions that also can be done by pill. They can be done by pill in the cervix, which is another option you can do when you get abortion care as well, if you don't want to swallow pills. So there are options that exist. But with Miffy, it can be a more comfortable process physically on your body, and the timing can be a little better managed. With misoprostol, once you take that, the abortion starts a little faster. Miffy, it's over a couple more hours and more over, usually over about like a day or so. It's recommended folks to rest and stuff. So
just miso is a little bit more intense on your body.
It can be for some people. But also miso has been used historically. Like, this is another thing, the abortion pill. I want to say it's 11 weeks that we have in the U.S. Other countries, again, who have the opportunity to do more research and testing on the abortion pill, know it can be used farther into pregnancy. That doesn't mean you're just, you're doing it at home. That means you're at a clinic and you're having other types of supports there. But how Moji spoke to the lack of being able to access this medication, even, and to be used for communities that want to be able to provide testing and support for medical knowledge. We don't get to know this stuff. And misoprostol used on its own can be used at 20 plus weeks to induce an abortion, to induce a miscarriage, to induce a termination. That's not something someone would do on their own. That's something someone would have assistance and support in. And that's why we want brick and mortar clinics so people can get that care. But what I don't want people to think, knowing the types of fundamentalist spaces I grew up in, this science does exist. So A, you're telling people to put something back in the bottle that we know is okay, that we know is not assigned a morality, that we know is critical for the pursuit of our life, being able to parent safe homes. And these are all things too that disproportionately are impacting people of color and indigenous folks, folks that may not be under these Christian hierarchical structures anyway, necessarily. Right. So you're pulling in everybody and you're harming particular communities specifically because of a religious directive that the majority of the world doesn't necessarily share.
Right.
And like Moji said, you're in a state that literally doesn't let you have abortion pills and you're going after a medication that other people are using. And it's just, it's crazy.
I wanted to say, I'm glad that Marie brought up that you can use abortion pills near your cervix. If you are in an unsafe state, don't do that because if you take abortion pills anywhere and you have a successful abortion or you have any kind of complication and feel that you need to go to the hospital, you don't have to say that you took abortion pills. There's no way for it to be tested in your system. And you can say you're experiencing a miscarriage and that is perfectly acceptable. You don't have to say any more information, and that kind of information can be used against you in many states in this country. But if you've used it near your cervix, they can see the crumbs of the pills by your cervix if they do any sort of internal exam.
Oh.
And so you may not want that evidence to be nearby. Well, no, because also we're talking about where we are a year later. And one of the things that we're seeing, and they existed before, but it's exacerbated, is people being criminalized for miscarriages.
Right.
And again, you can't tell the difference between if someone's used self-managed an abortion or taken pills under any context, or if they've, or if they're experiencing a spontaneous miscarriage. And if you have an overly zealous prosecutor or an overly police friendly medical staff, then you could find yourself in a criminal situation that for no reason. There's no reason anyway. Any pregnancy outcome should not be criminalized. This is my sincerely held belief. But, you know, you could literally be having a spontaneous miscarriage, have done nothing more than live your life. And this is just one of the pregnancy outcomes that exist in the spectrum of a pregnancy outcome, and find yourself embroiled in the legal system.
And another area that we see overlap, too, is in addition to being targeted for legal violence and prosecution, folks that are facing interpersonal violence and harm. Someone being, when
I wanted to ask about that. Yep.
That has not changed statistically. This is a public health. This is public health. This isn't even just abortion care, but statistically, when someone's pregnant, the odds of violence occurring to their body are higher. Violence at the hands of how hospital care is administrated. Trauma sustained there. Violence on the hands of an intimate partner. Violence on that by the hands of a parent or guardian or someone who's in a caregiver capacity for them. It's disgusting that it is less safe for someone to be with child, quote unquote, than it is with not in this country. So that is something else we've seen in the news. We've seen folks that have pursued safe legal abortion care outside of their state, and we've seen them be harmed by their partners when we've returned. We've seen coercive, abusive, I mean, I don't even want to say partners because that's not what how these people have behaved at all. We see abusive exes going after folks that they, you know, claim to love and support, even share children with. And we see that happening for folks that are in Texas, for folks that are in these other severely restricted states. And it's terrifying because it's hard to guarantee that that won't happen to someone if they have all those other, if they have that other violence occurring on them already.
Right. And well, and you're setting them up. Yeah.
Yes, you're setting them up. And we've not done anything to support or help someone remedy that situation to begin with. And that's creative. That has already existed. Now we're just making it easier to harm people We're making it easy to harness the law to go after your spouse, your ex. Like, all we're doing is empowering the people that are already misogynists, white supremacists, don't care about people's health. And we're giving them a pat on the back for ignoring science.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that was one of the things I wanted to ask about was the case involving the man who killed his partner because she traveled for an abortion.
Yep.
Because that Texas. Was something that like, that was like a gut punch for me because it was one of those things where I still had this like, and it wasn't even an optimistic perspective. It was just a, please don't let it be as bad as I think it's going to be. Please don't let it be as bad as I think it's going to be. It wasn't even optimism. It was just like cross my fingers and hoping. And seeing that was like, oh fuck, like making folks travel because how do you explain being gone for a week and maybe your partner knew you were pregnant beforehand and they find out, or even just like the level of being able to have discretion and privacy is so not there anymore because you can't just walk into a clinic and do it really quickly and try to just kind of keep it hush hush. Like traveling for a week and having to go thousands of miles in some cases to get to abortion care, that puts you in a position where if you needed to keep that private or secret for your own safety with your partner, or like you said, I don't even think partner is the right word, but with your abuser, or with your family members or whatever, you don't have the right to have that private anymore because you're being outed and set up for violence and abuse because there isn't a way to be quiet and hush hush about it. Because how do you be hush hush about a week long travel and like fundraising money or whatever to like get the funds to get there? Like it, you can't, it's not as the convenience, it's not just a convenience thing.
And also, I believe always, no, convenience is important, but I also believe like that's the story we heard, right? Like it's almost like these stories we hear about people who are not getting care during miscarriage. These are just the stories we hear. These are the stories where like, this story was one where that was the most blatantly extenuating circumstances. But like Marie brought up before, violence against partners who are pregnant is so common.
Right.
It's a really dangerous place. And so perhaps it's not far for me to believe. I genuinely believe that like this has happened before. It's just other levels of abuse sort of overshadowed the fact that a partner may have traveled for an abortion care or any other kind of care. And also in that vein, back in Texas, there's the man who was suing his wife's friends who procured abortion, his ex-wife's friends who had procured abortion pills for her when she was like, I'm pregnant with my abuser's baby. I can't do this again. They already had children. They were in the midst of a divorce. She was like, I can't. And he chose in the suit to name and shame and put pictures of his wife's friends in the suit. So like, that's essentially, again, enabling abusers to take their abuse to the nth level. And just rock with it without repercussion.
And to call in every fucking extremist in the country and dox people.
Mm-hmm. Like,
what the fuck?
Pictures. And he put pictures.
He knew because this guy was fucking like surveilling, like entirely stalking their spouse, which guess what? You can stalk your spouse. You can rape your spouse. All of those things can still exist just because someone's fucking legally married to you. That does not make it illegal. That doesn't mean you should be doing any of that. It still qualifies as that. This dude knew about the abortion pills being procured and waited until after they were used. So also this was not about, returning our discussion
this is just trying to corner his ex. Yeah.
It's power. It's power. He did not care about her actually having an abortion. It happened. He knew about it. He didn't try to stop it. So all the claims,
it's just retaliation. It has nothing to do with fully
just retaliation.
And it tells people like, oh, your friends maybe shouldn't be helpful because their asshole ex will drag them into a baseless lawsuit, right? That'll like shame and blame you in a place where it's really unsafe. Like, you could do that to me in New York. I don't care. Absolutely. I mean, I'm on a podcast talking about, I would aid in a bed of abortion. So like, you can't shame me about it, but I don't live in Texas.
No, that's terrifying. And even, I mean, there's also such a, all of this is so wrapped up in litigation and lawsuits. And I think the thing that like a lot of people maybe don't understand if they haven't been through a lawsuit. And the only reason I kind of understand this is because I almost got sued and was like, oh, holy fucking shit. Like, this is expensive. But like, even just the cost to like handle a lawsuit is crazy, and the stress and the chaos and the taking time off work and like just that alone of having to like address it and process it is a lot. And so even if it's just to scare and threaten people, and even if it's something where like maybe it gets dropped or whatever, just the stress of it all and the expenses and the way it disrupts your life, even if it is just to threaten and freak people out, is still a huge issue and does impact people greatly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's really the point, right? Like, otherwise, why would you do this? Like, it's not going to reverse the abortion.
No, like, you're just trying to scare people.
You're just trying to scare people, and you're trying to send a message to other people.
That's so terrifying. And we're lovely place to end, but we're coming up on the end of our time. This is like, so
did we even said anything important? I feel like there's so much more to say.
No, I think we have. I think this is a good follow-up to the last episode, but I wanted to end with where do we go from here? And I know that that's a very big question, but how can folks help join the fight of abortion access? I know we've obviously got elections, that's a huge aspect. And for listeners, we're going to have an episode in November with Vote Pro Choice to talk about some of the resources with voting guides and figuring out the information there. Obviously donating and volunteering. Do you guys have other resources and information?
So far, one of the biggest tools that we've had legislatively because of gerrymandering and so forth is ballot measures. And ballot measures have up until this point been an opportunity for voters to directly decide on something. So rather than just go by, you know, we have this one person in the legislature, all of the electorate that comes out to vote can decide. Usually it's settled by 50% or more of the vote. And so there's several of them. There's at least one I know coming up in Ohio this summer. It's not the ballot measure itself, but I think Republican legislatures have realized that this level of direct democracy counters their agenda. And so they're now anti-ballot measures. So in Ohio, currently you need 50% threshold. Voters are working to get the signatures they need to get a ballot measure onto the ballot for voters to decide. However, in August, there will be an election out of nowhere to change that threshold from 50% to 60%, making it a higher barrier to clear so that voters can directly decide on things like that. So I'm so excited that you have someone coming talking in November, but I think also one of the things people should do is look around you. See what's happening, see who the activists are that you know or the organizations you know, and be sure that there isn't something coming up, a special election coming up immediately in the voting space that you can work on that will impact the effectiveness of whatever can happen. Because these special elections, things that happen in the middle of August, it's mostly set up so that people are not paying attention, so that people are busy, so that people don't realize an election's coming up. So there's a lot just in legislatively, it's don't just wait, like look now, see what the timeline is looking like, and then check in often because things come up. That's just on that end. Marie, go ahead, you bring another thing.
Sorry, let's talk. There have not been enough new abortion clinics being erected, either independent clinics or clinics being expanded. So when you see that happening, support those efforts. There's a new independent clinic, Valley Abortion Group, opening in New Mexico. It's an all trimester clinic. So first, second, third trimester, whatever point people need care. I recommend folks looking to those types of providers, those efforts. If there's an abortion provider coming to your community, your neighborhood, show up and support them. One of the biggest harms that we, attacks that we see when people are trying to get stuff going, especially in the Midwest, is those folks that show up to those meetings that are incredibly religious and then run the table and the dialogues and everything. So before even like people can break ground, before new healthcare facilities, abortion clinics can even get set up, there's folks in the community that control that narrative. Because that's what they've been doing, right, for years. There's a reason why we don't have abortion clinics in some cities in the Midwest, even if those states are supposedly, you know, havens and sanctuaries. Also wanted to say, don't forget about mutual aid groups. There's organizations out there that are helping people fund their abortion, helping people fund adjacent reproductive care. And in some areas, like in Appalachia, for example, There's a great mutual aid community there. Don't forget to look at those spaces that I guess my point is, don't donate. If you're going to donate, don't necessarily look for the most professionalized type of space where you think, hey, this is where my money is well spent. Look to those organizations that are going to put that funding as close to that person who's going to be utilizing its hands as possible. And local communities, mutual aid organizations are big on that. Again, I know we're focusing on abortion. So many other areas are intersectional, though. So also don't just stay focused on abortion. Look, think and see, yes. All right, how do queer communities need abortion rights? Recognize that adjacency and use right. strength and your privilege in those areas too. Don't just wait till it comes for abortion.
Right. I also wanted to say, in some states where abortion care has been decimated, clinics are still there struggling, trying to give the kind of care that they can. And so support those clinics, right? That yes. might be a place where you can get birth control. It might be a place where you can get some degree of reproductive care that you're definitely not going to get at a fake clinic. And these places need your support because they've been stigmatized. If they're in a virulently anti-abortion state, they're trying to be starved by any sort of state funding. And so you as an individual can throw your dollars there and support them in that way.
Yeah. That's amazing. And obviously if you guys have any specific places that you know of and websites, I can pop everything in the episode description and give people some tangible links to just go for it. But thank you so much for coming on. I never will ever like decline you guys coming back on. I love chatting with you. Every single time I learn so much more. I feel like you are like my personal abortion teachers, which I so appreciate, especially coming from the environment I grew up in. And to be so honest, my first conversation with you two like ignited a passion for abortion access in me, where it became something that I talked about to so many folks. I wear your abortion AF sweatshirt all the fucking time. Yes. And everyone's like, what the fuck does that mean? And I'm like, let me tell you, abortion access fund. Like, here's their app. Let me tell you who they are. I like put an abortion sticker on my car. Like, I was just, it just ignited nice. A lot of passion for me. And it's been so helpful to learn from you both and to also think of you as my online friends. And I appreciate what you guys do so much. I will never stop supporting both of you and like shouting, promoting Abortion Access Front and Midwest Access Coalition as much as physically possible. I try to repost all of your guys' shit because I'm like, get it out there. But thank you so much for all that you guys do. And do you both want to give your apps or your organization's social handles so that people can find you guys?
Sure. My personal ad is dumb. So you just... if you want to find out what Abortion Access Front is doing, we are Abortion Front on all of the socials. And we have a lot of fun on TikTok. So check us out there.
Amazing.
And for Midwest Access Coalition, Instagram is where we're the most active on. We're on Instagram and Facebook. And that is Midwest_Access_Coalition. And if you go to our MAC website, which is MidwestAccessCoalition.org, one of the things that I specifically do is send out emergency contraception kits. Oftentimes it's with Plan B. We also have Julie available as a brand. So if you want just free EC, I just have a little form online. You can fill it out. It's right now it's accessible in English and Spanish, and I will send it to you totally. No questions asked or minimal questions if I need more delivery info. And I can get creative if you don't want parents to know you're receiving it or anything. I can send it to
amazing.
Work. I can figure out a pickup at Target if you're in school and you want to swing by after. So we can get really creative to work with folks of all ages. So yeah, fill out that emergency contraception form if you would like some Plan B.
That's so dope. Amazing. I will link all of that. Thank you guys so much for your time. I genuinely love you both. I think you're so great.
Good to talk to you.
And I will link all of that and I will direct people your way whenever I can. So thank you. And that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the podcast at Mindful Minds Pod and online at mindfulmindspod.com. And you can follow me on TikTok at Fina_Bina, FINA_BINA, for all of my religious trauma and deconstruction content. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys in 2 weeks.